pitch the ball to Bell. That's upfield. 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's in the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Cowboys. What a run.
Kicks it left wing, Lucas. Three-point jumper. Good. 6 seconds. No! Rebound! Cowboys win! Cowboys win! Oh, the Cowboys are going to the Final Four! Pistols firing! Touchdown, Oklahoma State!
Okay, Matt Quaid, welcome back to the podcast. Another week, another win. That seems to be our motto thus far this season.
Yeah, it's weird. I just keep coming on here and saying the same thing every week, but here we are after 8 wins, and hopefully we'll be back next week after 9.
Well, you're at the game on Saturday. I wasn't. You actually helped me out. I appreciate that. Writing some stuff for Pistols Firing. You did a great job. No, people loved it. they probably want you to take over. I don't know. But you mentioned something to me that was kind of interesting, just that the intensity was at a level that you hadn't seen it before.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was just the goal line stop, which most any team would get fired up about, but it just seemed like when they got that stop on the goal line, Baylor's first possession, the way that they were coming off the field, jumping around, pumping their fists, and then the way guys were coming off the bench to meet them, you know, on the sideline, it was just – I hadn't seen that kind of emotion out of them this year, I didn't feel like. And so it just seemed like they were out to prove something on Saturday. I don't know, just an observation that I didn't feel like I had really seen to this point. So it was pretty cool to watch, for sure.
Well, do you think that was a result of I don't know. I get the feeling that Baylor and OSU don't really like each other in football.
Yeah.
Did you get that?
Yeah, I mean, there definitely seemed to be some chippiness, which, you know, Jenny Carlson wanted to comment on in the Oklahoman, which, by the way, that little voting column or the little grades column, I mean, can you not be more creative than to come up with something better than that for like some kind of column, you know, than to just give grades to arbitrary things that pertain to the game? Like, how about, I mean, what were you going to give a grade to the hot chocolate? You know, like how good was the hot chocolate in the concession stands? Or, I mean, it's just dumb.
Well, I loved what one of my followers, or one of the readers, I guess, said. What did he say? He said something like, is that really what we're worried about for this game? I mean,
the chippiness?
Yeah. He said, where is it here? Yeah, because chippiness was what I was most concerned about on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it was just weird. But it did seem like there was, you know, a lot of chirping going on back and forth. The funniest thing I saw was whoever it was. I mean, I know there was one guy mainly guarding Blackman, but at times it was multiple people. And whoever they had over there guarding him, it seemed like every time he caught the ball, these people were talking trash to him. And I was just sitting there going, you know, I was looking at my dad going like, they realize he's getting like 12 yards a catch, right? Like they're playing off of him by like, you know, 6 or 7 yards, and then they're talking trash when they tackle him. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
It was bizarre because he could pretty much do whatever he wanted.
How many times do you think Whedon could have gone to Blyman for a 10-yard gain on Saturday?
Pretty much any play they wanted. I mean, it's one of those deals where it's like you almost wonder why they don't. Probably just because they want to make sure that other guys, you know, get some play. I don't know, because I mean it was like they just weren't even trying to guard him. I mean it was weird.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, it's like, yeah. Actually, I read an interesting article today from John Helsley talking about the diamond formation. Mm-hmm. And are you yawning again?
I did.
That is unbelievable.
I tried to cut it off.
Just so everyone knows, I need a screenshot.
It's 8:40. It's 8:40. It's too early for a yawn, but I, you know, to my defense, you didn't buy me a mic that had a cough button, so I don't know what you want from me.
Yeah, well, that's unreal.
I almost snuck that one past the producer.
Yeah, which by the way, you commented on that podcast with Brody last week,
right?
About how he needs to become a regular contributor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Maybe next year this spot's open if you continue with these actions.
Yeah, it's really just a battle to see who goes to bed earlier, me or Brody. So, I mean, who knows at this point? It's up in the air.
I don't even know what I'm talking about here.
I apologize.
The diamond formation, John Helsley was talking about how that really opens up the pass game, because you have to have so many people that are accounting for the four guys you have in the backfield.
Right.
And so it leaves Black. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, are you going to cover Blackman with two or three guys, or are you going to account for the diamond formation?
Right. I like to call that mushroom tree. I don't know if you remember from last year.
I remember that.
I like to call that formation mushroom tree. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. Which, speaking of weird formations, not to completely go off OSU, but were you watching Stanford USC at all on Saturday night?
Yeah, we got Andrew Luck, you know, lining up in the slot. And
Big Hands Andy. Did you see that where he lined up in the shot? You know, they lined up in the Wildcat, and he was out in, I guess he was in the slot, right? And they pitched it and then handed it off to him, and he launched it. It's like, if he's over there, don't you have to key in on the wide receiver that you're guarding and think that guy's going long? Like,
But they ran it again in overtime. I don't know if you were able to stay awake for all of that, but they ran it again in overtime and they didn't go to him.
Yeah, the funny thing about that is your text woke me up during overtime.
Yeah,
said, "Are you And the TV was on, but I was asleep on the couch. So
there you go. I got Stanford running the wild tree in double overtime, and you're falling asleep.
The wild tree? Did you come up with that on your own?
Yeah, that's next
that's
level,
impressive.
Right? Yeah, on my feet right now, wild tree.
I like that.
No, but I mean, how one stat that I saw today that I kind of wanted to bring up was Joseph Randall, 7 more touchdowns than any other running back in the Big 12. How good has he been in the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks?
But he's been phenomenal. I mean, I think he's been that good all year, really. I don't think it's just been the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, obviously the last 2 weeks he's had 4 scores each week, but he's been phenomenal all year. And I guess it surprises us to some degree, because maybe we didn't expect this type of production, but he's been outstanding. And the thing is it's almost like he kind of has the same, you know, misfortune, I guess, of being in this offense as it seems like Whedon does. It's almost like they don't give anybody in this offense the credit they deserve, except for maybe Blackman, because anybody could come into this offense and run it this way. You know what I mean? Like, it almost seems like they just don't want to give anyone credit because it's a product of the system rather than the skills of the players. And somebody had a good quote in one of the articles that were in the bullets this morning about the score is still 0-0 at the beginning of the game. I mean, these guys still have to go out there and do it. So to say it's just a product of the system is really, you know, misguided, I think.
Yeah, and Whedon talked about that, I think, in an article a couple weeks ago, how it annoys him that people talk about, you know, the system quarterback, and it's just, he's like, we got playmakers, you know, like we have guys that are legit playmakers. How funny was it that the defense goes out, and I mean, you and I have watched every snap, every game. That's the best performance they've had so far.
The defense?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And even though they gave up a lot of yards, and people want to say, well, they gave up a lot of yards, you know, even us as fans saying, well, they gave up a lot of yards, but it was all about the, you know, the turnovers they got. But you have to think, and I haven't looked at it specifically, but I feel like a lot of those yards came in the fourth quarter when it was well out of hand. So if you look at the yards they gave up in the first 3 quarters, I bet it wouldn't be nearly as many. But that's not really the point. I mean, yeah, the defense was by far next level. And like I said, it just seemed like they were out to prove something. I mean, the amount of times that they hit Griffin and hit him hard was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I know we've talked about this a little bit, how we kind of feel like if Griffin weren't on Baylor, we might be, you know, Griffin fans. But after watching him on Saturday, I don't know if I would be. I mean, I think on 3 occasions that I remember, theatrically was like trying to draw a penalty after a hit by laying on the ground and you know, a couple times even kicking his legs around. And then he got up and was fine. I mean, by all accounts, didn't seem to be injured at all. So clearly seemed to be just faking it. So to me, that's just weak. I mean, totally uncalled for, totally ridiculous. Not the kind of stuff that I want to see guys doing, and definitely not the kind of stuff that I'm going to, you know, be a fan of.
Yeah. I know you didn't get to see the broadcast, but the main guy, I can't remember his last name. It's Bob something, not Bob Davey.
Wischusen?
Yeah, Wischusen. Not Bob Davey, but the other guy.
Right.
After the Alex Elkins late hit, which was, I mean, I don't even know what it was, a joke that they even called it. But he said something like, I think we need to dust Griffin's helmet for fingerprints on that.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, which I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. But, yeah, you know, and I don't get why. I don't know. I feel like he's getting all these calls that I'm like, have you earned this? I mean, I know you've had a good first half of the year, but over your career, like, I mean, you're not a Landry Jones. You're not an Andrew Luck. Take Whedon out of the equation. You're not, you know, some of these other guys that get these calls. I mean, what? I don't. Do you get that? I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't really think I understand it either. I think that. There were a couple times where maybe we got him late, but overall I just was tired of seeing him, you know, laboring around on the ground after he got hit trying to get a call. I mean, there's just no place for that stuff.
Were you worried for my health when Justin Gilbert was at the 109-yard line and started matriculating down the field the other way?
I mean, I was definitely getting ready to call your wife and just make sure that she knew where you were and she was, you know, close by in case she needed to call assistance, because I thought, you know, it was one of those deals where you were like, no, no, no. And then you were like, wait, he got to the 10. And then you kind of saw a seam. You were like, he might take this back. This might just be insane. And he didn't, but it was pretty awesome nonetheless.
Well, I was talking to my dad about it, and it was almost like he outran his blockers, because he had, yeah. He had, like, I think he had Broderick Brown and a couple of linemen or something, and he kind of ran past him,
mm-hmm.
and somebody had a pretty decent angle on him and just took him down. But, I mean, if he would have taken that back, I would have been physically unfit to continue on blogging.
What's your fascination with Justin Gilbert? I mean, why don't you explain it? Because I don't know if all the listeners and readers have really gotten a chance to really understand what, you know, what this fascination is rooted in.
Yeah, I like to pick these guys that come in as freshmen, and I kind of just pick guys that I enjoy watching, and I kind of just label them my guy. I'm trying to think of somebody I did it with. I kind of did it with Markell Brown in basketball.
Right.
So he's kind of my guy out of that class. You know, I like the other guys, obviously, but just people that are physically gifted. You know, I just enjoy watching people do things that normal humans can't do.
Right.
And Robert Griffin referenced it inadvertently in one of his quotes after the game. You know, he was talking about the Gilbert faux penalty where he was tugging on Terrence Williams' jersey. Well, you know, that's fine if you want to call it, you know, something like that, but he's just physically better than everyone on Baylor, and I don't know, I just enjoy watching somebody that's that much more physically talented than everybody else. It's the reason I love Dez so much, you know.
Right. If you're Griffin, don't you have to think about what your career would have been like if you'd gone somewhere other than Baylor? I mean, because he's great. I mean, he's a good player, no question. And you have to sit there and go, wow, I mean, he's on this. Did he not? Was nobody else really looking at him? Is that what you were going
to
say?
Well, the two things I was going to say, I think he tried to go to Texas and they wanted to make him a wide receiver.
Okay.
Which, I mean, they could use a quarterback right now.
Right.
Speaking of, how bad is Kansas?
Yeah, three first downs, right? I mean, one of them was off of a penalty.
And one of them was on the last play of the game.
Wow. Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah. No, but Griffin was supposed to go to Houston when Bryles was there.
Okay.
And then he followed him to Baylor whenever Bryles came up. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Part of me thinks that he thrives because he's on – not because he's on a bad team, but because everything's on him, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I agree. I mean, you stick him in like a West Virginia or a Virginia Tech or something like that, and you know, maybe they're playing for ACC and Big East titles.
Right.
I don't know. You know what's going to be interesting is the Big 12 quarterback race the rest of the year. Because you got Landry going for 500-plus in Manhattan. You've got Whedon being pretty consistent. I mean, he's thrown one interception in conference play. Nobody likes to talk about that, though. And then Griffin, obviously, with the just phenomenal first half.
Right. It's got to be a two-horse race, right? I mean...
Yeah, you'd think, but...
Surely Griffin doesn't edge out Landry or Whedon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he should, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
Are you worried at all about Kansas State this weekend?
I mean, to say I'm not worried at all would probably be an understatement, because it's like I said last week. I mean, if you're playing the game, there's a chance that it could go wrong, right? I mean, I don't think we should be so naive that we just say, well, there's no chance. But
right.
Given what we did to Baylor, and given that K-State's passing defense is like 105, 106, right? Something like that.
Right.
I've got to feel like we just go off again. And I mean, I certainly think we'll cover the spread, even though it's plus 20,
yeah,
21, how, 21 and a half, right?
I think. Mean, that's unbelievable that you're playing a team that's ranked eighth last week, mm-hmm. which, you know, rankings or whatever. And you got to cover 21 to cover the spread. I mean,
yeah,
that's unbelievable. Did you see your boy Herbie's coming to town?
Yeah, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts on that. I mean, how much do you think he's probably, you know, planning to maybe call in sick or, you know, strain a vocal cord Saturday morning during game day so he can just stay in Tuscaloosa and watch, you know, number one versus number two. I mean, there's no way he ends up in Stillwater. Is there by kickoff? I mean, no, really. Like, there's got to be a way that he finds a way to stay in Tuscaloosa and watch that one, right?
No, he'll be in Stillwater. Him and Brent might have a TV on in the studio, though.
Oh, undoubtedly, they'll have a TV in the press box.
You might be able to hear Vernon Lundquist coming over the ABC broadcast calling the Bama LSU game.
You probably will be. I mean, and the thing is I want to. I mean, I you're not coming to the game, correct?
Correct.
Which is disappointing because I'd like to see you out there. It seems like no one comes to our tailgate if you're not there.
Well, I mean, pistols guy, you know.
Right. I'll be interested to see what they say. I mean, if the game last week against Baylor would have been ABC, Musburger, and Kirk Herbstreit, I mean, what would they have said the entire second half when the game's pretty much already out of hand? What things will they be saying about Oklahoma State if that's the case again this Saturday? I mean, will they be saying that they don't belong? Will they be saying they don't believe in them? I mean, when it's right there in front of them, how can they get away with saying this team doesn't belong or I just don't buy into this team being able to get the job done? Well, right? They have to buy in at that point.
But I think what happens is you get into a situation where you start comparing them to number one and number two, to LSU and Bama.
Right.
So you get beyond the K-State game because, okay, who's K-State or Baylor or whoever? And then right. you say, okay, well, can this defense go up against Alabama and LSU? And I think that's what they'll start doing, you know, if the game gets out of hand.
Right.
I don't know when we started forecasting what the announcers are going to do during our games, but if that's what this podcast is turning into, then so be it.
Well, maybe that's just a sign of, you know, the games that we're playing right now is just it's insane to sit here and think you're 8-0 and you've basically had one game where you were nervous. I mean, there were moments in the Texas game where you were a little bit nervous maybe, but not that much. So really you look at it and you go, wow, really the A&M game was the only nervous point of the season so far. You've had one game where you were worried about losing during the game, you know, like, that's crazy. And knock on wood, I'm not trying to jinx this. I'm just saying, like, it's crazy to be at that point. And here's to, you know, four more games going the same way.
I mean, every time I start thinking about, you know, we're three games from Bedlam and four games from the title, it's almost like it doesn't register.
Right.
Like it's on. like it's on a video game or like, oh, this is what we always talk about. It's not actually, you know.
Right.
We're talking about this in retrospect. It's not really happening, except that it is really happening.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, I can't even – every time I think about the OU game, I just think about if we're 11-0, that's going to be the craziest sporting event either one of us has ever been at. It's not, yeah. It's not going to be close.
Yeah, I don't think it will be close. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I can't even imagine had OU been undefeated also. But the thing is, we're getting closer and closer to a situation where OU can still get into the title game. I mean, if granted, Stanford's going to have to lose, and I don't know that OU would leapfrog the loser of LSU or Alabama if that team only has one loss. But I think a one loss OU could even jump Boise, possibly an undefeated Boise.
Do you think that let's say LSU and Bama play to like a 21-20 overtime, just freaking just thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And there's kind of an outcry amongst the voters, you know, that compile the BCS rankings, that they keep Alabama and LSU at 1 and 2. I mean, have you thought about this?
Yeah, it makes me nervous. But at the same time, I think OSU standing at 1 in 6 out of the 7 computer polls is pretty solid. And from the things I've read, it sounds like there'd have to be, because they have that advantage in the computer polls, there'd have to be a huge difference in the human polls for that to be made up for. And as long as they're at 3, then I don't think that there's enough. I mean, there's obviously not enough room. There's only 2 spots ahead of them for somebody to make a difference there. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but the computers don't factor in like the score, right? They just factor in wins and losses. Is that right? And like on the road or at home?
Yeah, I don't know that. I know that some of them don't factor in the score. I don't know about all of them.
Okay.
To be honest, for sure.
I mean, the point being that if LSU loses, then they've got one loss, and that's going to look worse to them than yeah, OSU or Stanford having no losses.
Yeah, the computers don't care if you know.
If you lose 21-20.
Yeah, if Jordan Jefferson's throwing a 60-yard bomb at the end of regulation to I mean, it doesn't care about any of that. It just cares about right. Who won, where the game was at, strength of schedule, whatever.
Okay.
So, yeah, I agree with you in that I'm not really worried about that. But still, it's like, you know, who knows what could happen. Were you rooting for Stanford or USC on Saturday?
No, I was definitely pulling for USC. I mean, really? I want Big Hands Andy to get me an SI cover if Whedon's not going to win the Heisman. But I wanted USC to win just because I want one less team. I mean, I want these now I know you would think you think it's awesome if we could have like 6 or 7 teams undefeated. And in a year where OSU is not challenging for the title, I'd be all over that. I mean, I'd be finding any colored shirt I could wear to root on every team, you know, to undefeated season. But given what's at stake, I wanted Stanford to lose just so there's one less team to talk about there. However, that being said, I mean, if OSU were to fall at some point, I would want Stanford to win it all. I'd want to see them in the title game, and I'd want to see them upset Alabama or LSU. So yeah. I guess in that regard, as long as we all feel confident that OSU is going to stay ahead of Stanford, I'd just as soon go ahead and see Stanford keep winning. That way, if OSU were to fall, Stanford could slide in there, because it'd be a lot of fun to watch Big Hands Andy taking down Nick Saban or less in New Orleans. Big Hands, man. That's what I'm calling it.
It kills me that you call it. Do the listeners even know? I mean, it's kind of creepy if the listeners don't know why you call him that. So do you want to explain yourself?
Well, it really struck me. Even last year, I think, during the Heisman ceremony when they showed some of his clips, you know, of him throwing and when he's gripping that ball, it looks like me gripping one of those like tiny balls that the cheerleaders throw out at games sometimes. You know, I mean, it wasn't even a mini ball. It's one of those, you know, itty bitty balls that I might hold. I mean, that's how big his hands look on a normal ball. And even when he throws it, I mean, it's like the impact that your brain, you know, feels after having seen him throw it. You still perceive the ball to be small even as it's in the air. I don't know if that was a very fluid way to say that, but the bottom line is he has big hands, and I mean, those big hands aren't going to have any problem lifting that 35-pound Heisman Trophy here. And you know,
is that how much it weighs?
I don't know. I just made that up.
I don't think it is.
Gideon, you know, why don't you look that up for us? How much does the Heisman weigh?
Yeah, we'll get Gideon on that. I did throw the question out there on Saturday night, and I got a bunch of very snarky, sarcastic responses.
That was great, yeah.
Of what Luck does better than Whedon. But seriously, I love Luck, and we've been over this repeatedly, right. But I just don't understand what people don't see in Whedon. And maybe, and obviously I'm biased, and you're biased, and we can't help it, but as I remove myself from the situation and objectively talk about it, besides his age, the dude does everything.
Yeah, I don't know what people want from him. I really don't. He's putting up numbers that rival anybody in the country, and to not give him credit for that just blows my mind. And it blew my mind when Graham Harrell didn't get it, you know, the kind of publicity he should have, which I guess was in his senior year. So it's just dumb. You know, people want to say it's A, his system, and B, his age. You know, maybe they hold the Chris Winkie factor against him. I don't know, but, and you know, I don't have a problem with Luck. I just, until this week, I didn't feel like he'd really had an exceptional passing game. And I'm sorry, but saying that his team didn't need him to do that, well, okay, but he's not, you know, if it's, and I don't know. I mean, I guess that depends on how much you say it's a trophy or an award about stats. I mean, if you want to argue that it's not about stats, then strip stats away from lists completely, where you talk about the players and just say you think this guy's the best player.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're going to throw stats up there when you're talking about which player's the best, then how do you not account for those stats all the way through all the people? You know, I mean,
all the way through all the people. There was a guy that this website called DraftInsider.net. Did you see this?
Uh-uh.
He said that, and this is a direct quote. His name's Tony Pauline. He said, "Brandon Whedon is a smart, controlled passer that lacks the great physical skills and arm strength for the next level."
Oh, I saw your tweet, and then I saw a million's tweet about it. Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's what everybody who's anybody in you know, draft analysis or even college football analysts talk about how strong his arm is. That's like the one thing they mainly talk about more than anything else. So then this guy's going to say he doesn't have the arm strength. That's like, how dumb are you?
How dumb are you?
I mean, not to be rude, but come on, bro.
Okay, Q. Appreciate you coming on. Hopefully next week, 9-0. Did you see that stat I threw out there today? OSU's only had one double-digit win streak in its history.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy, but it's also, you know, it's tough for anybody to have a double-digit win streak, really. So hopefully they'll be able to do it this weekend.
Yeah, Saturday, going for 10 in a row.
I mean, maybe Whedon needs to throw up 9 touchdowns like Keenum. Maybe at that point, you know, somebody would pay attention. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about that, if you leave him in against Kansas, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
What's out of the question? Double-digit?
Right.
I mean, he could have thrown a 10 or 11, I guarantee right. you. If you play the whole game and keep running it or keep going hard against Kansas.
Yeah.
I mean, he puts up 10 or 11. But
I mean, maybe this weekend they need to just, you know, maybe their goal should be to get Whedon 10 touchdowns and Blackman 6. And let's just, you know, and let's just thrust them onto the Heisman, you know.
Oh, I did want to ask you about this real quick. Gundy talking about Blackman going to the NFL. Mm-hmm. It seems like a weird time to do that, doesn't it? Did you see?
Yeah, I mean, I assume he was asked the question and he just answered it. I doubt he like came out and just decided to start talking about it. You know, I mean, I guess he could have kind of diverted the question by saying, "Yeah, we're not going to talk about that right now. We'll talk about that at the end of the season." I mean, I guess that's probably the answer most coaches would give, but I think it's also kind of a foregone conclusion in most people's minds. So he probably doesn't see it as that big of a deal to just say, "Yeah, I mean, he's probably gone." You know. Yeah.
No, that's true, and I appreciate Gundy's honesty and candidness. I don't know, it just seemed...
I mean, I'd rather him say that than say, well, you never know, we'll see what happens at the end of the year, or there's a chance he'll come back, or, you know, I mean, let's be honest, the chances he comes back are slim to none. So let's call it what it is and just enjoy it. You know, the last five games of Whedon to Blackman.
I can't believe there's only five games left. That's just the season has just flown by. It's been unreal.
It really is, and I don't know whether it's because we've got our sights set so hard on December 3rd that it's just like you just don't enjoy the journey to get there. But it is, man. It's like you're just so ready for December 3rd. You don't even know what it'll be. I can't even imagine what it's going to feel like if we're undefeated on December 3rd.
Yeah.
Or how any of us are going to get any work done from November 19th to December 3rd. And then if we were to beat OU, how any of us get any work done from December 3rd to January 9th. I mean, basically all of us need to go on like an 8-week holiday where we just, you know, eat Cheetos and Zingers and, you know, drink Mountain Dew and play NCAA football or, you know, Wii Olympics all weekend or for 8 weeks.
And try to get a hold of Holgorsen and see if he wants to eat Cheetos and drink Mountain Dew with us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm in. I don't know if you are, but I'm in.
Oh, man. Okay. Matt Quaid, appreciate you coming on. We will talk to you next week. Going for 9-0.
Sounds good.
Talk to you later.